Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Marijuana legalization has qualified for the statewide ballot for the first time, largely due to, well, it hasn't quite qualified for the statewide ballot, but it might and is expected to, largely due to the efforts by Responsible Ohio, a Columbus-based political action committee. Responsible Ohio Executive Director Ian James is on the line. Welcome to the show, Ian.
Hey, Ann. Thanks for having me today.
So can you give us an update about Responsible Ohio's efforts to get the proposal on the ballot in November?
Well, we've been collecting signatures for the better part of, 5 or 6 weeks now. We've qualified in all the counties we need to qualify in. Now we're in the process of just kind of going back through, getting additional signatures, and we're going to spend the rest of the month of May and June in finishing up our process. We, of course, data enter everything, all the signatures and all the lines that we can read. They're legible into a database and running that against the voter registration database, so we know who's registered, who's not, and we know exactly where we are at any given point along the way.
Who are the people behind Responsible Ohio's impressive $36 million nest egg? And I might be wrong on that number, but that's what we have the latest on.
Right. Well, you've got everyone from Frosty Rucker, a NFL football player. You've got Oscar Robertson, the Big O, who had the triple-double. You've got Nick Lachey, the entertainer and business person from Cincinnati. You've got a couple family members of Governor Bob Taft's. You've got Woody and Dudley Taft, Frank Wood. There are 10 different investment groups. They're not individuals. They're investment groups, and I can go on and on and on about who they are. But they're essentially all business women and men. Black and white. They've created jobs in the past. And the reason we have 10 is so that it's better to regulate for the state. You know, if you have it, what Colorado has, which is unlimited number of licenses, then it becomes impossible to regulate. And we're seeing that right now. So learning the lesson of other states, we've found that we follow the RAND Corporation's approach, as I've said before, not your granddaddy's liberal think tank. The RAND Corporation says have a limited number. It's easier for government to regulate. It's an appropriate way to go forward.
What do we know, or what do you know, or what can you tell us about what the motivation is behind the people who are backing the Responsible Ohio's proposed amendment?
Well, when I proposed this to the funders way back in 2014, I said, look, this is going to happen. This is not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. And you can either in front of this and be a leader, or you can follow. And so when I proposed this to them, it was a matter of getting ahead of this train. There are a number that want to provide medicinal marijuana for the chronically ill, because they realize that there are folks that have epilepsy, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's disease, sickle cell anemia. There are kids with epilepsy. Some have moved out of state. There are veterans who served overseas and came back with post-traumatic stress disorder, and marijuana provides compassionate care. There are others, certainly, that looked at this as a business opportunity and said, you know what, if it's going to happen, I want to help it happen. And there are still more that looked at this and said, Ohio is following a bad process of prohibition that's costing us $120 million a year in enforcement of failure. Look at the social justice aspect of this, in which if you're black, you're four times more likely than white Ohioans to be arrested for marijuana. And this is in a decriminalized state of Ohio, where you can have up to 100 grams of marijuana, but it's if you're black, you're four times more likely than white folks to get arrested for marijuana. The American Bar Association looked at this and says, you know, there are 300 collateral consequences of decriminalized marijuana in Ohio that affect people. That's from licensing to get a job, licensing to drive a car, as well as removal of federal student aid. So we're making the gap between college and high school even greater.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 MPR News. We're talking, getting an update today on the efforts to legalize marijuana in the state of Ohio. There'll likely be at least one, maybe two proposals on the ballot in November. If you have a question or comment, I'm talking right now to Ian James. He's the executive director of Responsible Ohio, which is behind the proposal that I guess the most prominent aspect of their proposal is it would create 10 growing organizations that can grow it in 10 sites around the state. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Now, your investors, all things being equal, are not that numerous. They're groups of people, true, but is the lack of that grassroots component, could it possibly affect your campaign?
Well, you know, we've looked at the grassroots advocacy, and we applaud what the grassroots advocates have been doing for several years now. But the reality is, when we look back at the movement in Ohio, you know, it was 1997 that the first medical marijuana bill was introduced in the House, and it was introduced by Bob Hagen of Youngstown. And every General Assembly thereafter, he worked with grassroots advocates to try to build momentum and build support and to get a bill passed. 18 years went by. Bob is finally out of the legislature, but no medical marijuana bill has passed. That's not an indictment on the advocates. It's just a reality where things are. This requires not only grassroots advocacy, it requires an incredible level of resources, and it requires an incredible level of organization. That's why we've got one of the most professional campaign teams I've worked in the last 33 years of campaigns and elections. I know I don't look that old, Anne, but I am. And so,
if you came into the studio, people could judge for themselves.
Right, exactly. But you see, now I have to see this horrible picture of me on online. That's like, I need to get you a new picture. But in any case, we have really built I think an incredible organization and operation. That does take the grassroots advocacy components. It does take a lot of the public relations and public advocacy components that's necessary to win. And you can't just have this feel-good approach to things. You actually have to get out and you have to talk to voters. We've spoken with millions of voters at this point. We've been identifying supporters across the state from the 7.75 million registered voters. We know that we can win this because we've been doing the hard work along with the advocates, grassroots advocates, to win this. And we look forward to being hand in hand with them.
Your critics say that it looks like the proposal has been structured to favor a relatively few number of people who want to get in at the ground floor if legalization goes through in Ohio and make a lot of money. There's a lot of money to be made, as I mentioned in the introduction to the whole program at the top of the hour. The U.S. market for legal cannabis grew 74% between 2013 and 2014. The demand eventually could outstrip the demand for organic food, but not everybody can share in the spoils of that if it passes.
Well, let's talk about that. Actually, this is a multi-billion-dollar industry that's going to be created in Ohio. The reason that there are 10 facilities for growing is so that the state can better regulate it. We don't want to have what they have in Colorado and California, where anybody that wants to operate essentially can operate. And it's unregulated. It's in a way that's dangerous. You don't know what you're consuming, and you've seen in Colorado where grow houses had to be shut down because of insecticides. That wasn't the state shutting them down. It was the city of Denver shutting them down because people were going to be consuming pesticides, insecticides, dangerous things. We follow what the RAND Corporation recommends, which is a limited number of grows. Those grows can expand if the licensees cannot reach demand of the consumers. And if anybody violates the law, they can take their license away and auction them off. And that seems to be an appropriate way to go forward. But beyond those 10, there's also the ability for thousands of Ohioans to own and operate their own retail stores. They have to pass a local option. They have to get the vote of a majority of the voters in the precinct in which they wish to operate. They can't be closer than 1,000 feet from a house of worship, a school, playground. And, you know, there are opportunities for thousands of Ohioans to operate not only the retail, but the medical marijuana dispensaries, the manufacturing facilities, as well as the testing facilities. So this is not a closed-door shop to people. This is actually open. And let's also keep in mind that there are going to be 3,000 employees at these grow facilities. Those grow facilities are going to have card check neutrality, so they're going to be union jobs with union wages. We're working with the United Food and Commercial Workers right now who have endorsed the effort and are actually working with us to make certain that we provide the training for all those workers to be top-notch and work in a safe environment with a living wage.
The issue of people who want to grow it personally, I would imagine that people who are interested in that aspect of it are already growing it personally and want to be able to do it legally, and people who want to keep their marijuana habits or marijuana proclivities to themselves. They want the privacy, but your proposal would require people to register.
Right, just as you have to register if you have a dog, if you have a boat, if you have a car. Registration is not a bad thing, and registration really just allows people to grow. And if that's a problem for them, I think that what you're going to find, Ann, is the people that are violating the law right now are probably going to violate the law later.
Like the people who don't get their dog registered.
Precisely.
Yeah. And the energy cost of indoor marijuana is enormous, and that's largely where it will be grown is indoors. In Denver, grow houses account for 10% of the city's total electricity use, which is amazing. I think in California, it's 3 or 6% of their total electricity use, which is amazing if you think about something the size of it.
Sure.
What is there infrastructure currently in place to account for that increase in energy costs that the passage of the Responsible Ohio's initiative implies?
Well, these state-of-the-art indoor secure grow facilities, warehouses, if you will, are actually going to be built with a lot of sustainable energy, green energy as a mainstay. So solar panels, wind, biomass. We're looking for a variety of different ways to offset our carbon footprint at these facilities so that we're not impacting the grid. But that is a reality. Yeah, these do consume a lot of energy. They also produce a lot of jobs, and they're going to generate billions of dollars, $550 million of which will go back into the state. 85% of that will go to local communities for infrastructure repairs, bridge repairs, safety services. And then for the counties, they'll also have the ability for economic development money. So, you know, yes, it does cost a good bit of money, and don't even talk about the federal tax issue here. But you know, it does provide for a lot of economic opportunity for communities, the state, and localities.
Last summer, Lake Erie experienced an algal bloom that cut off water supply for hundreds of thousands of Ohioans on the western end of Lake Erie, predominantly in the Toledo area. The bloom was largely attributed to agricultural pollution, runoff from fertilizers from the Lake Erie watershed. 3 of the 10 growers are located within that Lake Erie watershed in Lorain, Lucas, and Summit counties. What will they do to avoid polluting Lake Erie further?
That's a great question. And actually, all of the growers in that area are looking at a variety of different ways to deal with the fertilizing of the water. They're not going to pump that out into the streams or into the aquifers. They're actually going to remove the fertilizer through a variety of different techniques and ways to ensure that the water that does come out is clean. A lot of that problem with the algae blooms comes from runoff.
Right.
I mean, it's, you know, so that's out in the fields. We're talking about if water from this fertilized and then has different nutrients in it that's coming from a facility. Again, this is why you want to have regulation. This is a big part of why you want to have regulation is so that it protects the public, it protects the environment, and it provides for the people. That's a big reason for the regulation.
The use of marijuana has been shown to increase significantly among adults and children in Colorado now since the increase or since the legalization of recreational marijuana use. What are your expectations? What do you tell Ohioans who oppose that on principle because they don't want to see it spread?
Well, actually, I've seen it, the reports and the use of amongst underage people has gone down. Crime has gone down, as well as homicides and vehicular crashes has gone down as well. So, you know, I think the reality here in Ohio is that you can text, email, or phone and get marijuana delivered right now to your door within 15 minutes. You can get it marijuana at your house faster than you can get a pizza delivered. It's not a matter of if marijuana is going to come to Ohio. It's there. It's here. We have marijuana, and it is currently being provided by the cartel. There are certainly people growing marijuana in Ohio, but a great some of it comes out from out of state.
Mm-hmm.
So it is not regulated. It is not tested. It is not taxed. Consumers do not know what they are consuming. They want to believe that it is good premium marijuana or mid-grade marijuana, but they don't know if there's insecticides on there or mold.
But with regulation and all that, can people who consume marijuana now expect to pay about the same price?
Actually be able to pay lower because of the scalability of the grow. You will be able to sell marijuana below the black market price now, which is a big part of the goal here, is to undercut the black market. Now, you know, that is to ensure that we smother it. Will the black market completely go away? I don't think it will. There are still people that bootleg booze, and since 1933, we've had no alcohol prohibition.
Well, there's lots more to talk about, Ian James, and we will in the future. I thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Ann. Appreciate it.
That's Ian James. He's Executive Director of Responsible Ohio. That's the group that is looking to create growing sites at 10 areas in the state of Ohio. Require registration of people who want to grow small amounts for themselves. Lots of other details in that program. We'll be looking at it further. But for now, that's it. We'll continue our conversation about the legalization of marijuana in Ohio. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. At least two amendments to end the prohibition of recreational weed in Ohio might be on the November ballot. We just heard from a spokesman for well-funded and dominant Responsible Ohio's proposed amendment. Another group formed recently in reaction to that. The Better for Ohio amendment language was approved by the Attorney General 3 weeks ago. Better for Ohio Chairman Edward Howard was supposed to appear on the program today, but canceled at the last minute for health reasons. We'll hear from him later on. The group behind a third proposal, the Ohio Cannabis Rights Amendment, also is angling for a slot on the ballot. Joining us now is Mary Jane Borden, spokesperson for the Ohio Rights Group. Welcome to the show, Mary Jane.
Well, good morning, Ann.
The Ohio Rights Group's been working on the issue of legalization for many years, but your focus has been on medical marijuana, and it remains focused on medical marijuana. Why not expand it? Tell us what.
Well, we started out solely focused on the medical therapeutic uses of cannabis. And then with the Ohio Cannabis Rights Amendment, which was certified for the for statewide circulation for signatures in 2013, we added the use of production of industrial hemp so that our farmers could gain access to this remarkable product that can create so many sub-products in and of itself. And so we are solely focused on that. And I think our philosophy from the get-go is that when you're looking, if you're going to use the metaphor of a drug war to characterize cannabis, and I think that's fair to say, the first order of business for any moral society is to take the sick, dying, and disabled off the battlefield. That's just the right thing. That's what a moral society does. And then further to that, what we're finding is that, and this is part of the science that's emerging out there that's just absolutely incredible, each human being contains within themselves what's called a human endocannabinoid system. You know, we have a digestive system. We have a circulatory system. Well, the endocannabinoid system is just like any other bodily system. And it is chemically similar. In fact, it's chemically almost identical to the elements that compose the cannabis plant. So it stands to reason now. We're seeing exactly why what were anecdotal comments by people in terms of, oh, it helps me here and it helps me there. There is a scientific basis for that now. And so we think that the science of it is emerging to the extent of that we need to make sure that the medical message about cannabis gets out there and is not drowned out by this massive rush towards the full legalization of the plant.
So do you actively oppose legalization of recreational marijuana?
We are silent on it.
You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. If you have a question or comment for my guest, Mary Jane Borden, she is with the Ohio Rights Group, which supports the legalization of medical marijuana and also the legalization of agricultural industry of hemp. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're silent on legalization of all recreational. The group Better for Ohio is collecting signatures for their initiative that would make it expand the growing and so forth of marijuana, the opportunity to grow it legally in the state of Ohio, but as a recreational drug. And you're silent on that as well?
Well, we're not actually silent on that because I'm saying we're silent on the full legalization, but mm-hmm. in terms of the Ohio Cannabis Rights Amendment, we're not silent at all on the growing of marijuana by those who qualify under our amendment. We, in fact, probably have the broadest statement concerning that because we feel that it's up to the quantities and the growing are actually rights in our amendment, and the quantity should be left up to the patient. In other words, when you take a drug, you're going to find out that people will take certain dosages that works for them of a compound for this condition versus another dosage for another condition. And so the one size fits all, that you can only have 1 ounce or something like that, is counter to that. If, for example, to make the oils, you might take as much as a pound to make the oils that are so very therapeutic in terms of, for example, the children that have intractable epilepsy. So putting an arbitrary number on how much quantity a patient can have, we think is counterproductive to their therapeutic need. And that's why we keep that open-ended in our amendment.
Does your amendment, if it passed, would it allow people to grow marijuana, medical marijuana for themselves?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
We have the clauses in our amendment are very clear on that. They have the right to, for example, eligible residents have the right to produce their own cannabis. And they also then have the right to acquire it to alleviate their suffering from state licensed providers, so that we think that they should have the right to grow it themselves if they can do that. But we also believe strong regulation. And then in the context of our amendment, we set up a Ohio Commission of Cannabis Control to regulate the medical and therapeutic uses of cannabis in the state, but to also do things like operate in the public interest, be multipartisan, actually, and be accountable to the public. So it's worded in such a way that the commission is responsible to not only the patients, but also responsible to the larger state of Ohio to act ethically and in compliance with what the patient needs are.
What have you learned from other states where, for instance, in Colorado, I think medical marijuana was legalized in 2003 or 2004. Have you learned anything from other states where there was a period of time, for instance, Michigan, right, just north of us, where it has been legalized for medical use?
Yes, we did. We learned quite a bit. In fact, our amendment was constructed in 2012 when DEA started to raid the dispensaries in California. And that's, along with the human endocannabinoid system, as I discussed earlier, that's what sparked the idea in our mind that cannabis, when you understand that we all have this system that's so intrinsically matched the cannabis plant and therefore kind of stands to reason why the plant is so very therapeutic, it rises almost to the level, and I think it really does rise to the level of being a civil right. And so that's why we term it the Ohio Cannabis Rights Amendment, and that's why we have rights in our amendment that are not in either Responsible Ohio Amendment or in the Amendment for Better for Ohio, that people have the right to be free of discrimination and to be free of interference from the state concerning their use of cannabis. And they have the right to privacy and confidentiality with respect to the records that the state keeps about them. And I think those are really significant for particularly the patients and the sick, dying, disabled in the state, because we expect those rights of privacy going in to HIPAA and other things like that have been created with respect to medicine. But they're really missing from the medical picture in all states. And when we looked at Colorado, and we looked at these other states in California, what was happening there, that was the inspiration behind the Cannabis Rights Amendment.
614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. I'm talking right now with Mary Jane Borden. She's a spokesperson for the Ohio Rights Group, which supports legalizing medical marijuana growing and use in the state of Ohio. They're working on getting enough signatures to get it on the ballot in November. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. The group, you're collecting signatures for your initiative now, right, Mary Jane?
Yes, we are.
Tell us how you're doing.
We were doing pretty well until July last year, and we took kind of a gut punch, and it really kind of stopped. It kind of stopped the whole process in July, unfortunately. And so we've regained our legs since then, but it's been a struggle to get back to where we were last year. But I think right now our momentum, and people are seeing that medical marijuana in Ohio can pass. Medical marijuana in Ohio is favored in, like, the Quinpiniac poll, which was released a couple months ago, by 84% of Ohioans. And so the message is, I think it's being pretty well understood by Ohioans, because the margin of error that was undecided in those polls were just negligible. Now, conversely, when you're looking at the full legalization or recreational, as you could term it, use of cannabis, that's still only polling in the low 50s, maybe 52%. Mm-hmm. That may be very gratifying in that the tide is turning for cannabis in the United States, and hopefully it will ultimately result in the prohibition. Nonetheless, if we're looking at a ballot initiative, the general rule of thumb has always been, if you don't have polling, solid polling, 60% or more, don't bother. And so I think a lot of money's going to be wasted, and you're not going to get very much from that, because it simply is not going to cross that 50% threshold with that low of support in the state of Ohio. Were we on the ballot, then I think without question we pass.
Esther and Van Wert, you're on the air. Hi, Esther.
Hello.
Tell us about your son.
He's totally disabled. He's got 100% arthritis in his legs. So whenever he tries to get around much, sometimes he runs out of his pain medicine. But then he smoked some pot a few months ago until I could get his, until it was time for him to get his medicine again. So then he can't get medicine at all now because he had pot in his system. And they said if he tests again, they will put him in jail because he has pot in his system. So I'm wondering if the governor and other state officials, doctors, and everybody also have to be tested for marijuana before they can get pain medication they need.
Let me ask you this, Esther. You're saying he's being tested for pot in order to get his regular pain medication. Who's requiring him to test for pot?
One of the local doctors. I'm not sure which one.
Okay. Before he'll give him a script.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Okay. Mary Jane, do you hear stories like that very often?
This is exactly why there is an Ohio Cannabis Rights Amendment. People like that should not suffer discrimination. People like that should not suffer interference from the state with respect to their use of cannabis. As I said earlier, the reason that it works for him is because, like all the rest of us, the human bond that binds us all together is that we have a human endocannabinoid system. And he's finding that the cannabis he takes in is supplementing the cannabinoids that are already in his body, and therefore it's making him better. No doubt it is. The doubt is, we hear this all the time. And the fact that a doctor is out there and denying him pain medication is egregious. It is immoral. That doctor should be put in jail and not that that young man. And so, in my view, the Chi Cannabis Rights Amendment goes directly to her issue.
Okay. Esther, thanks for that call. Appreciate it. She says her son's moving to the West Coast to avail himself of the medical marijuana out there. But Mary Jane Borden, do you have any sense about how the pharmaceutical companies view medical marijuana? They must be working on synthesized marijuana at this point.
Well, it's interesting that you're talking to a former pharmaceutical market research analyst. I worked for a pharmaceutical company for 9 years, and we analyzed, this is, of course, back in the day, we analyzed both Marinol and a product called Natalone that were just released by the National Institute of Drug Abuse, which developed them back in the late 1970s. It would have been a good adjunct to cancer chemotherapy agents that the company was marketing, but ultimately in the day, they ended up not going that direction.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's what we're finding is that with dronabinol, which is Marinol, it's sold under the brand name of Marinol, it's synthetic THC. It's not plant-based THC.
Right.
And to the person that I've talked to, it's not the same. It's not good as the oils that come from the whole cannabis plant.
Joe in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome, Joe.
Yeah, I had a quick question. I've never used marijuana. I've never been out west. But my perception is that out west where medicinal marijuana is legal, that is abused. And you could have just about any reason to get a prescription for medical marijuana. What's the concern about that being abused here?
Okay, good question. Mary Jane Borden?
We'd like to focus more on the medical use to truly the sick, dying, disabled patients in Ohio who need this medicine. And if you're sick, you're not abusing this. You're trying to get better, trying to get well. Now, but in that context, we would like to see cannabis here in the state of Ohio be the right that I've spoken about so that it can be accessed by the patients. And in the context of our amendment, again, we're still focused on the medical here. We term it an eligible resident. Somebody's made eligible because they have a debilitating medical condition that is named in our amendment. We name about 30 different conditions.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you have that condition once your amendment passes, then you will be eligible to use cannabis and medicine and have that right as I've been speaking about.
But I guess he's probably talking about, and what's to stop you from sharing it with your buddy who doesn't have a medical necessity but could sit there and smoke a joint with you?
Well, I suppose there's nothing technically that's going to stop any of these laws and any of these laws from that happening. But if you're a sick person, you know, how many sick people really want to go about sharing their medicine with a bunch of other people before it makes them well themselves? You know, this is counterintuitive. I think that the sick, dying, disabled who need this plant are using it responsibly. And I think that if you're going to talk about some of it getting diverted, sure. But there's plenty of a black market out there right now in Ohio where people can get cannabis if they want it. What we're talking about is making it available to the sick, dying, disabled, and taking them off the battlefield of drug war first.
Okay.
Let's stop arresting them.
Shirley in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Shirley.
Hi. First of all, I wanted to find out how you could get involved with the movement to help get this bill passed, because I think it is very important. Like the lady that was just on a few minutes ago talked about not being able to get your regular meds if you're test positive for marijuana. I have been through that situation myself because I tried it and I discussed it with my doctor and she said, you know, I don't believe it's harmful. I do believe it's beneficial. But she said, if you test positive, I have to be tested once a year. If you test positive for marijuana or any other kind of drugs that you're not prescribed in your system,
mm-hmm.
that you will not be given your pain medication.
Now, is this a rule she has, or is this a state law?
It is a law. I'm not sure if it's state or federal, but
okay.
It is a law. If you have, if you get like I believe it's class one medication,
okay.
Like strong medication,
like Oxycontin, right?
Oxycontin. That's what I prescribed. I've been disabled for 20 years. I was hit by a hit-and-run drunk driver and hurt me pretty bad. I've had 3 back surgeries and a neck surgery due to that.
Yeah.
And I'm in constant pain all the time. And, you know, she said that, you know, if it ever became available legally, that she would prescribe it for me.
Okay.
But, you know, I think it's ridiculous that, you know, the government can control how you control your pain. If you're in serious pain, I mean, it's crazy. But, and another concern of mine is children. I think that anything that would benefit a child that has epilepsy or seizures, I think there should be no question nationwide, worldwide, to approve that for children as long as it's safe.
Okay.
You know,
Shirley, I hate to
children suffer.
Yeah, I hate to cut you off, but we need to get on to our next guest, and I really appreciate your time today.
Can I answer your question?
Thank you very much.
I'd like to answer Shirley's question.
Okay.
To get involved, contact the Ohio Rights Group. We're our website is ohiorightsgroup.org, ohiorightsgroup.org. We're on Facebook, same thing, Facebook, ohiorightsgroup.org. We have ability to send contact messages through our website. So, Shirley, go to our website, go to the contact us section, send us a message, and we'll get right back with you.
All right. Mary Jane Borden, thanks for joining us again.
Thank you for asking me to participate this morning.
Coming up, more conversation about legalizing marijuana for both medicinal and recreational use in the state of Ohio. Mike, this is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm Ann Fisher. We're talking about proposed ballot initiatives that would legalize medical and or recreational use of marijuana in Ohio. We just heard from the spokespersons of 2 of the 3 groups angling for a slot on the ballot in November. Although the polling shows that a majority of Ohioans would support legalizing medicinal and recreational use of marijuana in Ohio, there is still opposition to the trend. And by the way, my previous guest, Mary Jane Borden, was absolutely correct. The numbers supporting legalizing medicinal marijuana is in the high 80% points, and recreational use of marijuana is in the low 50% points. Joining us now is Derek Siegel. He's executive director of Ohio's high-intensity drug trafficking areas program. Derek, welcome to the show.
Good morning, and thank you for having me on your show.
The High-Intensity Drug Trafficking Areas Program was created by Congress with the Anti-Drug Abuse Act of 1988 to share information, among other things. Last summer, it produced a report on the impact of legalization of marijuana in Colorado. Impaired driving was a big part of that impact. Tell us what you learned about the impaired driving issue.
Well, it is. I think that, you know, that's one of the several things I would talk about that I call impact statistics. But, yeah, they have shown that the number of accidents have increased since marijuana was legalized. The number of fatalities involving marijuana have doubled since legalization. And I was just at a meeting the other day, and somebody was talking about they were having 17 hit-and-run accidents a day since legalizing marijuana. So, you know, just one more thing that police officers run around doing these car accidents now because they're hit and runs, people are high. So I think there's impacts like that. And, yeah, they have shown, you know, people will put statistics out there that traffic accidents are down in Colorado. Well, that's true. But the other half of the stat is that they're up involving marijuana and people testing positive for marijuana.
What are you comparing that to? How long have they been measuring that aspect?
Well, most of the stats that they produced in the Colorado report, they kind of looked at 3 different periods. They looked at the period prior to legalization of any type, and then really when medical marijuana came in like, I believe that was 2008-2009 arena out there, and then post-recreational legalization, so the last 2 years.
And did you see the same sort of uptick when medical marijuana was legalized as you did when it was fully legalized?
Yeah, there was an uptick, and that was not as dramatic mm-hmm. as once recreational was legalized, but there was an uptick, yes.
The report, as you said, looked at 3 different eras from 2006 to 2008. The early medical marijuana era was the first. Just in general, how did that compare and contrast with the current era there?
Well, if you look at the fatalities involving, the percent of all fatalities without the operator testing positive for marijuana, And I'll even give you a little bit more than what you'd asked for, I think. But like in 2006, 2007, those numbers were around 7%. And then in like the period of 2008 to 2010, they went from almost 8% to almost 11%. And then in 11 and 12, they went to 14% and almost 17%. So almost, you know, an easily doubling from the days of when it was not legal to recreational legalization. And that's 2012, and I don't know, they haven't compiled the most recent numbers, but I would expect those to continue to go up.
We're talking about proposals to legalize marijuana in the state of Ohio. One such proposal would do it for medicinal purposes and hemp growing, agricultural, industrial hemp growing purposes only. The other two would legalize marijuana for recreational use as well. My guest right now is Derek Siegel. He's the executive director of Ohio's High Intensity Drug Trafficking Areas Program. It was formed back in conjunction with the Anti-Drug Abuse Act of 1988. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Now, I remember a few years ago when we were talking about the Colorado law, the question arose as to how they would measure or test for impairment of marijuana. What do they do?
Well, that's the problem. There's no easy way to test for it like you can on the roadside with a breathalyzer or something. And they did come up with a number, and I'd hate to say it because I don't want to be misquoted or mm-hmm. say it wrong, but they did come up with, I think, a measurement, and it's in your blood that they can test for, you know, following an accident or something like that. But there's not an easy way to test for impaired driving like there is alcohol.
So where are these statistics coming from, blood tests?
Yeah, I can, you know, some of them come from, let me see if I can pull that number.
Or I guess the question is, do they?
Well, it comes from the National Highway Transportation Safety Administration Fatality Analysis Reporting System. And so these are, you know, I always tell people they're non-law enforcement statistics, some of these, because mm-hmm. everybody thinks that the law enforcement statistics are always biased. And so, you know, that's why I like some of these impact statistics, like the fatalities, the issues that it has caused in the schools and the increased usage in our kids out there.
A lot of the problems that we read about have stemmed from the use of edible marijuana. Some of that stuff looks like jelly candies you can get at Kroger's or something. What did you look at that and that impact of it?
Well, they do. And I think that that's the one of the concerns, and to me, is the youth, our younger kids. And there's a lot of concerns that I will get to later if we get to it. But in response to your question, yeah, they looked at, you know, kids going to the emergency room for unintentional marijuana ingestion under the age of 12. In the period of 2005 to 2008, there were no admissions. In 2014, there were 12 just in the first 6 months. So, you know, the young kids out there, and even your pets, people who are pet lovers, they don't know the difference between a gummy bear and a marijuana gummy bear. And the packaging on the items that are being sold out there, you can tell they look like candy. They look like, you know, they're geared. They look like Pop-Tarts. They're geared to get the market to the kids. You know, it's really no different than the next round of big tobacco. It's all about marketing. It's all about increasing your market share. It's all about getting people to use it and getting hooked on it. And but kids are going to the hospital. The calls to the Rocky Mountain Poison Center have went up. You know, the number of reported marijuana exposure cases, the average percent for kids 0 to 5 nationally is about 5%. In Colorado, it's almost 18%. So you do have an impact on the young children who don't know the difference. And then, you know, there's other byproducts of it, the explosions and injuries caused by butane and hash oil. To produce that product out there, have went from, you know, maybe zero explosions in most years to 32 in 2014 with 30 injuries.
How do you factor in the idea that there are millions of Americans already out there smoking pot, legal or not?
Yeah, well, depending on what numbers you read and whose stats, you know, and we all know how statistics can be.
Well, there's a huge market for it. No, there's no doubt about that.
Well, there are, and there's estimates of maybe 91% of the people don't use any illegal drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, I think we go back to the beginning of what is the purpose of drug policy, because we get a lot of, why are we enforcing these laws? if we can't, you know, stop it. You know, it's there just like alcohol or whatever. Well, the purpose of drug policy is simply to reduce the number of people who use or abuse illegal drugs.
But illegal is a political term. It's not.
Well, it is. But the problem here, I think, Ann, is we've made this a political issue, and it's really a public health, public safety issue. And I think that you know, we talk about there's some misnomers out there, and I think the general public even sometimes don't understand the impact that this has had in Colorado and also what the terms exactly mean. I had a gentleman come up to me and thought that medical marijuana meant that a doctor gave you a prescription, that it was FDA approved. That's how you do a medicine in this country. You know, it's under the control of a physician. It's FDA approved. And you know, I know you had some medical people on earlier, and it's 70% of medical marijuana cardholders in Colorado are under the age of 42 for chronic or severe pain. So it's not for seizures. It's not for, you know, glaucoma. It's not for some major illness that is unfortunate that some people suffer from that. But the program has become just people who want to go get a card to get high. Mm-hmm. And there's no control over, like even in Ohio, the last time when they were talking about, you know, one of the groups looking at it, there was no limit that you could have. So you could have 1,000 pounds in your basement for medical purposes, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. And there are pill alternatives available. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and somebody once told me there are 8 criteria to meet to be a medicine, and you have to meet all 8, not 7 of 8. Marijuana would meet 0 of those criteria to be a medicine.
Chris in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Chris.
Hi. I just want to talk to you about the stigmatization of marijuana users, you know, calling it an illegal drug. It's illegal because of the politics.
Right.
Tricky Dick Nixon hated the dirty hippies because they wouldn't support his war in Vietnam. And guess what? Now, 40 years later, those dirty hippies are doctors and lawyers and people from all walks of life. And why do we have to stigmatize people who use recreational marijuana? And I'll take my answer off air. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Chris. Derek Siegel?
Yeah, I don't know if there's a stigma, and I would go back to the federal marijuana laws started back in the 1930s, long before the hippies, as he says, from the 60s and 70s. And I also think the difference is, you know, the people who grew up in the 60s and the 70s, the THC content was 3%. You know, it's 20%. The highest they've tested in Colorado has been like 30%. So, you know, it's a different drug now. And it's not so much, and this is where I get into the concern about the youth. It's not so much about the older person or the adult who wants to smoke marijuana. It's about what does it do to our use. And we all know, just like alcohol, if it's legal, it's available. If it's available, they'll use it. And the numbers have shown that in the states with the highest use of our 12 to 17-year-old people are those states that have legalized marijuana either, you know, medically or recreational. And there is science out there that proves that it has an effect on the developing brain. And I think that that's the concern, at the higher THC content, the younger kids using it, and what it does to them later in life.
A lot of things have an impact on the developing brain. We know that. But are you concerned or frustrated that there has been so actually very little research done on marijuana?
Well, I think that with, you know, a lot of the universities and medical, you know, different associations or aspects of the medical field have done studies. I know that I think Stanford has done some
but
other ones.
But they're pretty limited because of the
right.
federal requirements.
Right. Well, I think that if you know, people who think that there should be medical marijuana, then the fight should be with, let's get it where the FDA can look at it and treat it like any other medicine. Let's just don't jump out of the box and legalize it. I mean, in my job, we thought we might have to wait some time to get some lessons learned from Colorado, and we're already seeing those lessons, you know, from the, like you mentioned, the car fatalities. Crime is up, you know. Now, depending on who you listen to, some people pick certain crimes. They won't pick every crime. But what I see is crime is up 12% in Denver. You have the 34% increase in suspensions and expulsions from our schools. 85% of that, according to the school resource officers, is marijuana possession or sale. So it is going to trickle down to the kids. There is still going to be a black market because somebody has to supply those people who are under the age of 21.
Well, yeah, and we just have about 30 seconds left, but I want to ask you one more question. Maybe you can tell me about it. Maybe you can't. But is there any sense that the upticks in all of the problems associated with marijuana are a function of the floodgates coming down after several decades of prohibition, much like they did after just a few years of prohibition of alcohol?
You know, I don't know, and I think that's why we have to wait and see, and that's why, you know, rushing to change constitutional amendments, you know, or change our Constitution, because if we don't get it right, it takes another amendment to change whatever we messed up. You know, I think the legislative way is a better way to pursue it, but that's my personal opinion. And one of the other misnomers I really think that is out there about marijuana is people are not going to jail. About 0.3% of inmates in state prison are for jail, and less than 90...
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay, but I want to get to that issue later.
Okay.
Derek Siegel, for now, we have to call it a day. Thank you so much for your time.
Okay, thank you.
Derek Siegel, he's the executive director of Ohio's High-Intensity Drug Trafficking Areas Program. Thanks for listening. All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.